Greetings, everybody. Welcome to Flywheel, your number one source for everything Frax, DeFi, and all that's in between. If you want to know what's going on in the world on chain, well, you come to the right place. This is DeFi Dave here with Capital K, and we are here to help you harness the power of the Flywheel. And speaking to someone who understands flywheels very well, we have on the Garrett Hall, the missionary of the Curve ecosystem. Been at it with the Curve Cap newsletter for a hot minute. And second time on the show, great to have him on. You know, we go into a bit on what's going on in the world of Curve with the release of Llama Lend, the performance of Curve USD, the general state of DeFi, talking about Convex a bit, talking about Frax a bit, talking about AI a bit. Yeah, we get into AI. There's a little bit of everything for this one. Kit, what are your thoughts?
It's just a good vibe session. No notes needed. Kick your feet up and just relax.
Just sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. And if you enjoy this show and every show after that, you know what to do. Go ahead and subscribe. Hit that bell button. Leave us a comment. Let us know what you think. If you're watching this on X, Twitter, make sure you give this a like, retweet, reply. Follow us on all of our socials, at Flywheel DeFi on Twitter, TikTok, and Telegram. Follow us on Farcaster, at Flywheel. And if you want to subscribe to our newsletter, go to flywheeldefi.com. Go ahead, subscribe. You'll thank yourself later. You want to follow me on Twitter, I'm DefiDave22, and on Farcast, I'm DefiDave.
You can follow me at 0xCapital_K.
And let's get the flywheel spinning. Do you hold ETH, but don't know what to do with it? Want to earn those juicy liquid staking derivative yields, but don't know where to start? Well, Frax ETH is there for you. Frax ETH is Frax's native LSD solution, allowing you to earn boosted yields in multiple ways on your ETH. If you want to get started, go to app.frax.finance and turn your ETH into Frax ETH today. All right, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of Flywheel. I'm your host, DeFi Dave, joined once again by Capital K. And this time around, we have our brethren from the other side of the Curve Convex Frax trifecta of an ecosystem. We have on Curve Cap, Garrett Hall, DevRel at Curve, and you do everything at Curve. I feel like you're like the voice of reason and founder of Leviathan News. So, Curve Cap of Garrett. Should I just say Garrett or Curve Cap? Does it matter?
Garrett's fine. Yeah,
Garrett's fine. Yeah, Garrett, great to have you on again. I believe you're like one of the top shows that we've had in terms of views on Flywheel. So it's good to get you back on. It's been over a year and a lot has changed. A lot has evolved. We went from everybody talking about LSDs and LSTs to now everybody talking about L2s. Curve has since come out with a stablecoin, and today Llama Lend, I believe, was deployed out into the ether, no pun intended. So there's a ton to go over. But just to start off, since you're the Curve man, what is the state of the Curve ecosystem right now? Is it stronger than ever? Or what else is at play?
Yeah, it's pretty wild to me to see like just how all of these things are coming together. Obviously with Frax, like you guys are used to like shipping a ton of products like all the time. At Curve, like sometimes you have to wait like months or sometimes years between like some of the big launches. So when they come, like it's a pretty exciting deal. Like as you mentioned, there's the everything that we've seen happening with Curve USD over the past 6 months, which has been phenomenal in my opinion. It's been holding its stability on top of like fulfilling sort of all of the like promises for what it was expected to like do. And it's just been like a pleasure to see that like starting to take shape and starting to get like more and more integrated throughout DeFi.
What was those promises that were expected about CRV USD?
So I would say that the there's an intense focus on the Curve USD peg, right? Like they have all these kind of like complex mechanics, like the peg keepers, and like just as much as possible going into it to try and like, you might have seen it like where like it dips like a fraction of a penny below a dollar, and all of a sudden like the borrow rates like will spike up dramatically to push it back, or it will like just tick like a fraction of a cent above a dollar, and like the interest rates will like drop very suddenly. So we knew that it was going to be like an intense focus on keeping the peg. But what's nice about it is it's worked, right? Like we've seen the worst it got was like nearing half a cent off peg, at which point like borrow rate spiked to like high double digits. And as a game of chicken, someone eventually repaid. And since then it's been solid. So like then given that it's like proven out its like ability to like all the mechanics work and the ecosystem is there, like then the focus has been to like, where can we drive supply and demand? Essentially, like where can we get liquidity sinks for CurveUSD? Like that comes with people integrating it into other applications in DeFi, getting it spread onto all the explosion of L2s. Every time that happens, like that's more CurveUSD that kind of like sits off the market and is not necessarily going to be repaid easily, which just stands to like kind of keep that TVL sticky and keep it growing. So we're in around like 150 million TVL for CurveUSD. I think it's going to just keep going up as we kind of see more and more liquidity sinks. And, you know, like we've all been waiting for this DeFi bull market, and maybe it's here.
Maybe it's here with Uniswap turning on the fee switch today. Right. Holy shit. I was not expecting that. I don't think anybody, this was like the stone cold bottom. Maybe it's a return to value. Maybe this is DeFi's triumphant comeback. What are your thoughts on Uniswap turning on that fee switch and what it means for DeFi?
Yeah, I think it's good for them. Like, I think I've been paying attention to DeFi now for like several years, and it's just not really been interesting to pay too much attention to the Uniswap ecosystem because there hasn't been that much interesting stuff coming out, right? Like, their token has just sat there and done nothing. Mm-hmm. So it's like there's just never anything like worth like digging into on it. So I'm happy for them if they start to get some interesting tokenomics, some of these fun Ponzi games into their ecosystem. And we'll see, right? Like, it's just a proposal. There's a million ways it can fall apart. It's rugged a million times before.
Yeah, we've seen this one come about before. But the fact that it's from their, like, governance lead or something, that's why everybody's like, oh, this is, like, it's finally happening.
Yeah, this one's not a drill. And, you know, like, we'll see, like, if it's actually a good thing for Uni or not, because I feel like a fair amount of their token valuation was just it was pure hopium. But once you actually start delivering revenue to a token, like if it's not quite enough, we'll see if they can sustain that multiple or not.
I feel like there was only so much hopium to go around, and you just kept on seeing it reach new all-time lows against ETH and Bitcoin, that they had to do something, and probably something got passed in legal was just like YOLO. And then they decided to put up this proposal for the fee switch. So I think it's great for DeFi. I think this will bring more interest back into DeFi and be like, oh, wow, we can actually value things based off of certain methodologies and profit and revenue and streams and all this stuff. And Kit, that's more your wheelhouse.
Yeah. So I actually, when I saw this, first I was excited and then I was scared, because expectations will always far exceed actual. Like the actuality of things are going to be just not as good. And when we see this fee switch, first question, okay, is it sizable enough, meaning the rev share, for the token holders to be like, hell yeah, you know, we're so back? Or is it going to be too little where it's kind of like not inconsequential? And then second effect is, will the LPs stay there if they have to start sharing the fees? You know, so then like all of these, like what if was just compounding for me.
But, you know, for some reason, LPs have stuck around Uniswap, even though like there's been all the studies that most of them don't like actually make money. So if they stuck around while losing money all this time, I don't see why they disappear just now.
Well, I feel like this could be like the straw that breaks the camel's
back. I've seen some of the like
unicorns back. The straw that breaks the unicorns back.
Or it could be the token pumped and everyone sold off and now they're out.
Yeah. And so going back into Curveland, you said that the current circulating supply of CurveUSD is around 150 million, and I think it's kind of stuck around there. What do you think it will get to, you know, be maybe like 500 million or a billion to scale up to that? Has it really been a kind of like slow and steady, let's make sure everything's stable, like let's make sure that the peg is in check and then move on to the next level? What has been the growth strategy for CurveUSD?
So it's entirely been just market forces driving it at this point, right? So, and it's not at all been anywhere near stable around that. Like it's been like massively fluctuating. So you basically saw like it was launched. There was like this kind of like fortuitous run up, and then the Conic cap happened. At that time, like Conic Finance was the primary source of the epicenter for all the liquidity. Like everyone was just taking their CurveUSD, putting it into Conic. It had its own kind of interesting like effects on the market because it was so dominant that it was like single-handedly like causing this like feedback loop back into Curve. So it was having like there was some like work being done in terms of like trying to rebalance the Conic liquidity allocation, and then it just disappeared. So that's like the first time Curve USD like not went above 100 million, and then it kind of like went back. You know, then there was the Curve hack, so everything went back to the doldrums for a bit. And then it went back to 150 million, dropped back below 100 million, and then in past recent weeks, shot back up above 150 million again. So it's incredibly volatile. But in my opinion, like the most recent run up, it's been like the best conditions for CurveUSD. Because as I mentioned, like the thing that's most important for CurveUSD adoption is liquidity sinks. You need CurveUSD that's essentially off the market, that's not just going to like disappear quickly. If it's too close, so if you take CurveUSD and you like immediately trade it out to like Tether or USDC, you know, that causes like just very slight like pressure on the CurveUSD price, which causes rates to go up, etc. But if it's held as CurveUSD and not transacted into something else, that's what allows you to kind of have like massive growth.
Monetary premium growing.
Exactly. So
in the Llama economy.
And that's been happening much more lately. So like you might have noticed, like Curve has been paying more attention to sidechains than it ever did before. And a lot of it will be like Curve USD will just be emitted broadly as streaming rewards, generally from Mitch's pocket, once they like launch all these pools. And it's like there's a method to that madness, because if there's a lot of Curve USD on Arbitrum or Optimism or Fractal, wherever Curve USD winds up, it doesn't usually get bridged back quickly to L1, right? Like you can sometimes find bridges that go somewhat fast, but usually it just sits there. And it's usually been like spread to maybe a few thousand people's wallets in the amount of like 10, 20, 100 bucks like that they got in rewards. If you have like 100 bucks sitting on an L2, you're not going to be doing much with that. It just kind of sits there and like... It's a liquidity sink of sorts. There's now like 30, 40 some million Curve USD on side chains. So you're talking about pretty significant amount that is, you know, of course some of it will find its way back, but there's enough of it that's just kind of like being now integrated into other applications around all these L2s. That's probably going to stay there. So I think we're going to continue to see the conditions are in place to continue to see the Curve USD supply rising.
And speaking of other Curve products, Llama Lend was released today. I have to admit, I'm sorry, I haven't looked into Llama Lend at all. I'm not familiar with how it works like I am familiar with Curve USD. So for myself and Kit and the viewers at home who may not be familiar with Llama Lend, what is it? How does it work? How is it different than other lending protocols? And what does it mean for the Curve ecosystem?
Yeah. So the good news is it's almost exactly the same code as CurveUSD. So if you understand CurveUSD, you can pretty easily understand Llama Lend. The big difference is that CurveUSD, the contracts are authorized to basically mint new CurveUSD, right? And this is why it's like sensitive in that no one, like you can't just accept like Dogecoin or like Shiba Inu for like minting CurveUSD, because it has that capability of minting CurveUSD, it could become systemically damaging if you know, someone like some garbage token got in there. It would threaten like CurveUSD itself. So there has to be like DAO approvals behind it. There's only been like a few type of assets, basically wrapped Bitcoin and various like Ethereum LSTs that have been kind of approved for CurveUSD. Llama Lend is much more like the factory is open, anyone can launch their own markets, anything goes. And you probably can and will see like a variety of like just complete like garbage tokens, as well as like a lot of great tokens launching their own like one-way lending markets, which will have the same sort of like UI and interface as CurveUSD. So instead of course, the token being minted, it relies on someone supplying that token and getting the interest from the lending.
So are these isolated pools?
All isolated.
All isolated pools. Is it similar to FraxLend, where you can lend and borrow Frax and you can use certain assets as collateral, but it's like factory. So like anybody, if I have like Shiba, I can make Shiba collateral to like borrow it's permissionless, so it could be Curve USD, it could be Frax, it could be anything, right?
Yeah, so it's permissionless. I'm a little unclear on some of the details because I've seen some conflicting things. I've seen one report that it has to have Curve USD as one of the tokens, but then I'm not 100% sure if that's entirely accurate. It also needs to have a price oracle, which is generally going to be like a Curve, one of the newer generation Curve pools that have the built-in price oracle. So it'll probably be a lot of Curve pools LP tokens that are being used.
Loop that.
Yeah. So you can see, you can already imagine where that's like helpful. I've also seen some reports that like that Curve USD is not like, or Curve is not directly earning fees from Llama Land, but from the Curve USD like effects on the ecosystem and like the greater utility for Curve USD. It's Curve USD itself that's the cash cow, and this is just like a utility to kind of drive more utility for that.
Yeah. And is there anything else on the Curve roadmap coming up? Like, we got Llama Land, we got CRV USD.
Dave?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Before we jump into the next product, can I ask some questions around the
lending? Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. So after the pool is stood up, does Curve, you know, engage in any AMO like functions where you guys would effectively mint CRV USD and just kind of drop it in there? Or is it only up to the market to do the supplying?
Yeah, so the Llama Land pools have to be like somebody supplying. There's no Curve USD directly minted to it. I believe that there is some sort of like way of directing emissions from the Curve DAO to the pools. So I believe it might be possible that people who are like lending out the token will be able to like be rewarded from the DAO for doing so. So there might be incentive to like, for example, supply Curve USD to it.
Got it. And you mentioned Curve LP token, but is it possible to do like drop it into Convex and then get the Convex balance as the collateral or no? Or you got to choose between either leverage or yield?
That's a good question.
Imagine you get like staked Convex, loop that around.
That would be pretty cool. So yeah, I think we're just going to have to like wait and see what the actual factory looks like.
Got it.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. So wait, was that it, Kit?
That was good. Okay. Yeah, thank you.
So let's go a bit more on like what should we expect from the Curve roadmap coming up for 2024?
So you know, the devs are never going to like give an official roadmap, especially
Curve. Same thing with Frax. Yeah. We get it. They ship when they ship in stealth.
Yeah. So I think that like what I'd say the story of 2024 might be would just be the kind of big efforts of 2023 coming into fruit, actualizing their potential a little bit. Like there are two major launches from 2023, one of which was Curve USD, which it did pretty well, but it's kind of like only been like, I guess, so it did hit above 100 million for the end part of 2023, but spent most of 2024 above that mark and probably going even higher. That's obviously like been like a huge like cash cow, and I think it's going to like continue growing, especially with like the potential resurgence in DeFi and like all the fortuitous trends. And if so, like that is going to like be a pretty major like and reshuffle the Curve ecosystem. And then I'd say that the like undersung thing that's also kind of like coming into its potential really only since this past month has been the release of the newer generation stable swap pools. So a lot of stuff got held up in 2023 while we were waiting for like these to get through all the audits and everything. Just a like completely kind of like redone version of the original stable swap pools with a lot of extra features like built-in price oracles, the capability of handling like up to 8 tokens, a lot of efficiencies built into it. And they for like most of the time since these had launched, we'd kind of seen like a lot of the volumes were still mostly like going through like a lot of the legacy routes. But in the past month, really the like volume going through the stable swap implementations has really picked up. So I'm assuming what's happened is like a lot of like searchers and like aggregators probably have like finally started to index it and like build it into their routing. But like we're seeing like a huge uptick in volume that's been running through a lot of these stable swap pools.
So this new generation of stable swap pools. Is this V3
or V2? This is the, if you see any of the pools, like they're tagged with NG.
NG.
For next generation.
Next generation. Okay.
Or new generation. New generation. It's not a,
Speaking of, what were you going to say?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I like default to next generation. Cause I think it's like better for memes, but
yeah. Speaking of a next generation of stables, we recently saw Athena coming out strong out the gate. I think it's above 420 million TVL at the time of recording. They really caused such a splash, with their raise, with their yield. You know, there's a lot of talk, like, is it a stable coin? Is it, how do we know if the yield's legit? What are your thoughts on Athena?
Yeah, I thought that Athena was like really, really interesting take.
Me too.
So like, this is where I say, like, I feel like, you know, DeFi is back when you see something like this launch and just so quickly get to, what was it? You said $300 million in like
$420 million in like 4 days.
Very on brand.
So I think like my thought on it is like, it's entirely like at the moment, like it's entirely like being fueled by the fact that like Ethereum funding rates are so high, right? Like it's like 27% open interest. And that's like where most of that yield is coming from. I'm just kind of like making numbers like up off the top of my head. I don't know what the actual numbers are. We've also just got through a bear market where like it nearly turned negative. So I'm sure they're going to do great while like everything's doing great.
Yeah.
And that's fine. Like that's what, like, that's exactly what you want to launch into, right? You want to launch when like you have these conditions. Get that money in their treasury, figure out what to do for the next, like if the market turns sour, but that much money in the treasury, they'll be able to figure something out. So I don't know what the next steps are. They talk about like an insurance fund. I think the big risk that I would be looking at for them is not even just like funding rates turning negative, but just if they go below whatever the DeFi, like quote unquote, risk-free rate is, right? Like at the moment, it's like somewhere around 10% is what you might get on stables. And you could easily see it like falling just short of that and like people just, you know, flying to the next thing. But they're smart. They'll figure something out. It's a cool idea.
Yeah, I agree. You know, we had Seraphim on the show several weeks ago. I've been seeing Athena since they first announced, probably like a little over a year, probably around a year ago. And their founder was in the Frax chat, you know, kind of, I feel like they have the same mentality of being positive sum and, you know, working with other stables and working together. And so, you know, I think it'll be a fun experiment and I'm hopeful they'll do well and whatever challenges that they have ahead, they'll figure them out.
Yeah. They have like an amazing team behind them, which I think, you know, really speaks volumes.
Yeah.
In DeFi, right?
Yeah. And Seraphim said something interesting about BD, which we're both familiar with, Garrett, when I interviewed him. He says something along the lines of when a protocol is starting out, BD is super essential for that initial growth, for that initial getting that attention. And then eventually, if you're successful, a protocol will reach a certain size. And then it's just kind of like maintenance mode. And that's pretty much what happened with Lido. What are your thoughts about BD and crypto as it pertains to DeFi?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. So like, Curve has been like fairly like famously like developer centric. It we only hired our first like full-time BD person a couple months ago. Who you should get him on this chat. He's a good person to talk to. Martin Krung.
What's his name? Oh, Martin Krung. Okay. I've seen him.
You've probably seen him around because he's like a DeFi crypto OG. He's been in Bitcoin since before me, like 2012. And he lives in Switzerland, right? So he's like all the Curve team is in Switzerland, pretty much, like all the core team. I think that like Curve is like awesome and that it's like succeeded without having placed much of an emphasis on marketing and business development, but it's also like a little bit like I don't recommend anyone else try like that Curve strategy again, right? It's like catching lightning in a bottle. I definitely think that like 99% of the new DeFi protocols out there should probably focus on BD before they even start writing code, in my opinion.
Ooh.
like, it's such a crowded market nowadays. Like when Curve launched, and even Frax and all these, like, it was such a quiet scene compared to now. Like, nowadays there's so much noise. And the only way that you're going to be able to get anything to stand out is if you've just done the very basic, like, steps of, like, is this something that people actually want or need? And the answer to a lot of things is yes, right? Like, obviously people needed Athena because, like, for whatever reason they launched, and like 400 million like flocked in within 2 weeks. So they obviously built something that scratched a niche. I'm not sure that like everyone is building something and they've actually like done that due diligence to say, yeah, there's all these whales out there that are ready to go in. And usually what people just want is like high yield. So like that's easy enough. Like you don't need to be like the smartest person to know that. But there's also other things that like, yeah, I don't know. Like the like in school, I was taught that like if you want to start a company, like the first thing you should do is find your first 10 customers, talk to them, know what they want inside and out. And if you find 10, that you, there's usually 100 more just like them. So mm-hmm. that's why I'd encourage people to do it on the BD front.
Speaking of, you know, new products that people want with yield, we saw Asymmetry come out recently with a bang. I think they're a super unique product because they're boosted LST. I had them on Alpha Bytes, and Hannah's a friend of mine. Their product wasn't originally like that. They just simplified things. It's like, hey, it's all about boosted yield. It's all about that number at the end of the day. And it's basically S-Trax ETH boosted with VLCVX bribes. What are your thoughts new products that combine money Legos like Asymmetry and their effects in the ecosystem?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Asymmetry. I think they already like filled their cap within a few hours of launch, right?
Mm-hmm, they did.
So unfortunately, I wasn't able to get into that one. So like there's a few stories there. First of all, is the CVX5, who like they're the ones who put it on my radar because they're like, have you talked to them yet? The CVX5?
Yeah, no, I've talked to them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then your audience is probably already familiar. They're basically like this kind of like squad or group of people who are like just big Convex fans who decide to come together and like just like start like being almost like the BD wing of Convex grassroots. Is that like a fair description of them? And like mm-hmm. figure out like ways that they could like add value to the Convex ecosystem. And they came across this and did a like great job of kind of convincing them to like do the 70-30 blend of like staked Ethereum and through SFRAX ETH and Convex VLCVX, which is a great idea. Like it's brilliant. The only thing that I worry about with them is like they're still marketing it like to my like eyes it's like a LST, which it's not straight up an LST, right? Like it has the risk of Convex stuff going down. I don't think it's one of those things like it's a bull market. Probably everything's going to go up for a bit for however long the bull market lasts. So probably no one's going to notice or care. They're just gonna be like, oh, great, this is all going up. But it seems like that might get them into trouble if people are expecting it's like pure Ethereum.
Yeah, I think it's marketed as ETH because the yield on it comes back in ETH. But it's not pure Ethereum, but I'm not sure how else you would categorize it. People already have a mental model for LSTs in their head. So if they call it something else, they would probably have trouble, you know, getting the message out there about it.
Yeah. So it's like they sort of have to market it the way they're marketing it.
Yeah.
So I kind of agree with that.
It's kind of like with Athena. Like it's not technically a stable coin. They say it's an internet bond, but it's hard to categorize it as anything else. If you don't call it a stable coin, then like, how do you get people's attention? It's kind of like this catch-22 thing going on here.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. So like, you know, I hope it's super successful. Like I think it's like obviously bullish for Convex at the end of the day, right? Like,
oh yeah, it's a buy button. Super. It's a constant buy button for Convex. It's like, all right.
So like I always feel like I don't have enough Convex is like what it always comes down to. whenever all these things keep happening. Because as Frax, Melissa, I'm sure that you're also like seeing the impact that Convex has had on the DeFi ecosystem, and it hasn't like gotten a fair shake, I feel like, because the bear market, you know, sapped so much energy from DeFi. But I don't think like there's a number of tokens that like I like go to sleep and I'm like, I wish I had more of those tokens. And Convex is always one of those.
The Berkshire Hathaway of DeFi. The CVX Thrive coined that, and I don't think there's a better description of Convex. You know, and they actually expanded the protocols that they support over the bear market, F of X and Prisma. Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts on this Convex expansion? How do you think it's played out? Why do you think Convex decided to expand? And like, where do you see it going in the future, and what it means for these protocols in Convex?
Yeah, I mean, it's just utterly brilliant, right? Like, the best thing you could do in the bear market is exactly what they did, right? Like, find these like value, like protocols that are insanely valuable and going to be insanely valuable, and like try and do what you can to like integrate with them. And that's exactly what they did. Like, I'm sure that I don't need to tell you this, but like, the free market in not financial advice, right? Like all that, like the way the market values these tokens is utterly insane, right? Like these tokens like trade, I'm not a trader, because like I'd have to like shut off my brain to try and like figure out how sometimes these tokens trade. Like there's no rational reason for me that like Convex should have fallen as far as it did, given how bullish the developments for Convex have been over the past like couple of years. Like those two just like don't add up to me. It seems and still seems super cheap. Convex, like not financial advice, but like go out there and buy some Convex.
You should change your name to Convex Cap at this point.
I probably That's should, but need. I don't think they could. I don't think there's room in the CVX5 for a sixth member.
CVX so. Six. It sounds like SEAL Team Six. CVX Team Six. Yeah.
But I think that like the recent redesign of their homepage, like I hope, kind of like communicates to people, because I get like when I try and think about how people value these tokens, I think it's like just like incredibly simplistic, right? I think they mostly like value them related to Ethereum, and then like maybe like a rough like market cap next to it. I don't think most people realize Convex isn't just a conjoined twin of Curve, right? Like it has tremendous power over Curve. It also has tremendous power over multiple protocols, all of which are like building and growing and likely to rip in the bull market here. And Convex is like at the catbird seat of all of it. So like,
go ahead.
Just like its valuation presently is stupid.
I think Convex helps in a way institutionalizing voting and governance within protocols. Like the fact that you have like such a large stakeholder that isn't the core team or other, you know, people in the ecosystem, it helps to centralize it a bit. And, you know, now they're so experienced at voting and participating in governance, they're actually quite constructive to go to. For anybody like looking to do anything in the Curve, Frax, F of X, or Prisma ecosystems, all you really have to do, well, not all you really have to do, but what I would highly recommend you do is go to the Convex Discord. You go to, you know, CVX voting, the VLCVX voting, and you talk to people there. They're a very active chat. They're always discussing. They would actually really like and encourage people to come over there to discuss. They'll appreciate it, and it goes a long way. I feel like people have this like wrong idea with whales, is that they're gonna vote how they want. No, it's not just like that. They're gonna listen to the community and vote, because there's not just like token power, there's like social power and social and trust. If like whales vote against their community, everyone's be like, the fuck, like what is this shit? And there's gonna be an uproar. So it's really, that's why it's really important to have your voice heard. And
it's really easy in crypto.
That's what's just beautiful about it. Like there's no other place where you can like, could you imagine if I had Facebook stock me like causing a fuss and Mark Zuckerberg answering? No, there's no way. But in crypto, you can do that. You can go and talk to the largest stakeholders and have an impact and have an effect. And I think that's what makes this stuff so cool.
Yeah, it's the nice thing about like the like massive explosion of crypto protocols out there is like a lot of them like are craving, like a lot of these whales you mentioned, they're craving attention. They're craving the feedback from their community.
Very good point.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, sometimes whales, like they only can do so much. They only know so much. And so if they have, I guess this is where like future lobbyists come in and whatnot. It's like they have some guidance on like how to vote and where to go. Like, you know, we'll see where that goes.
I feel like another point about Convex that, you know, we haven't mentioned is there, in terms of product innovation, it's partnership innovation. Because you see here with Curve, they come out with, you know, CRV USD, Llama Lend. Then with Frax, you see we released like, you know, 8 products over the bear market. Whereas Convex just pretty much kept the core product itself kind of the same, but it has all of these like other partners to do the innovation for them, which I think is like really smart, you know, in terms of like actually having to innovate. They didn't really, they just found good projects and gave them the platform.
Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah. So, you know, check, you know, just like if you haven't looked at the Convex homepage for a bit, like go check it out now and you can kind of like see them spreading their like tentacles throughout DeFi and like it starts to make sense, their vision, and like they're fulfilling and executing this plan very well.
Kit, I believe you said that with Curve and VE Tokenomics, the tokenomics is the product. And, correct. You know, all these protocols have VE tokenomics. Well, if the tokenomics is the product, there's nobody that fits in better into the product, that has better product market fit with the product than Convex, you know?
Yes, I feel like Convex is like the ultimate SaaS product for VE tokens.
Yeah.
You know, like it comes in a pair. Like you kind of have to have both. So it's really awesome to see the flywheel work out. And, you know, CurveCat, because of you, I'm going to take another look at Convex again, because I feel like I have a small, like a tiny bag of Convex, but then this conversation had made me realize that their Convex
the
vision
Berkshire
is
Hathaway.
Actually, yeah, exactly. The Berkshire Hathaway in the making. And, you know, obviously NFA, DYOR, we are biased, extremely biased. So do your own research, everybody.
Moving on. Let's get to, Frax and Fraxtel. As Curve has been, you know, evolving and shipping more products than ever on the application level, Frax has decided to go down to the infrastructure roll-up chain level and launch Fraxtel. And Sam and team have quite ambitious plans there. So Curve, Cap, I'm Garrett. What are your thoughts on Fraxtel and what are you looking forward to it?
Yeah, I'm very, very bullish on it. Basically, like, this is like the year of L2s, right? Like, you probably saw the screenshot where Optimism has like just a web page where anyone could just like click deploy their own L2. So, like, obviously, we're going to see a lot more L2s coming out. But then the question is, like, are the L2s like good or useful? Because you can imagine 90% of them just fading away. And that's where, like, I'm like super bullish on Fraxtel relative to the market of L2s. Because I feel like Fraxtel, first of all, is like, it's not just a copy paste fork. Like, you have like the block rewards dynamic algorithm and everything mixed into that. You have like it tying directly to like Frax and like the entire like tokenomics of the Frax ecosystem. So it's like actually like a piece of a broader strategy as opposed to like just kind of like, hey, we're just going to launch an L2 as a cash grab type thing. So I'm very bullish on where Fraxtel can get to. You have like over $1 billion locked within TVL, locked within the Frax ecosystem. You'll be able to like start pushing like a lot of that, my guess is, onto Fraxtel. Maybe that's not the roadmap. Maybe you want to keep it like sell in L1, but my hunch is like you're going to start like tapping into that to be able to like allow any developers on Fraxtel to like have access to like the broader Frax TVL. Is that fair? Or am I just assuming things?
Can you say that one more time?
Right now there's like $1 billion plus of TVL on Frax on mainnet, right?
Yeah.
And am I right that like the game plan is to like start allowing like some of that to like bleed onto Fraxtel to help out like developers that want to develop on Fraxtel to get access to it?
Yeah, I think that's part of the vision. I'm not sure how that part's gonna be executed. I think the ultimate vision of Fraxtel, I'm sure you saw the graphic with Fraxtel in the middle and you see Bitcoin, Ethereum, Cosmos, Solana. It's basically Fraxtel is the final chain of settlement for all Frax assets. And it's basically it seems like it will be atomically, what's the word I'm looking for? Atomically, you can just like bridge over. There's like, you don't have to bridge over. It's just everything's native to Fraxtel chain. So even if you have Fraxtel on Solana or Fraxtel on Cosmos chains, it all goes back down to the Fraxtel original chain. And so it basically eliminates all the bridging risk because it's just all natural. I don't know how else to say it. I'll probably let Sam speak more on it than myself with ETH Denver coming up. This will be released after ETH Denver, this podcast. So with that in mind, what are you looking forward to most at ETH Denver? What do you expect at ETH Denver?
I just look forward to seeing just how badly this ages then by the time I get back from ETH Denver, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm sure by then... there's gonna be a thousand like everyone's gonna be trying to get their like all their stuff out by ahead of ETH Denver. So I'm sure there's gonna be a thousand announcements between now and then, and this is gonna be obsolete. What am I looking forward to at ETH Denver? So there's the Unstable Summit, which I'm going to be in town for the first day.
Oh, you're giving me the mantle to host. I watched your opening speech for the Paris one because I'll be hosting the one in Denver. And I'm just like, okay, what should I say? Do you have any advice there?
I have to admit, one of the things I'm looking forward to is not hosting again. Just because like I always like stress out like ahead of whenever I have to do these things and spend like way more time preparing than I should. So at ETHCC, like I had that and I had this like big talk I had to give.
You had a great, you had my favorite talk at ETHCC.
Well, thank you. Thank you. But the cost was I like locked myself into my shoebox, like hotel room for like the entire week beforehand to like prepare and write it out and prep. So I didn't get a chance to like meet people and talk to people and like see what everyone was doing. So I've like kept my schedule a bit lighter this time so I can just like attend and like enjoy it, right? Like actually see what's going on around DeFi. Because I felt like the people I did meet, I was like a zombie. I was like, hi, bye, gotta go.
I know how that feels. Do you have any conference pro tips or advice?
Oh, you're gonna be great. Like you're a natural for this.
Thank you.
I'm super excited to see what you come up with, but like you know the schedule, right?
I have my outfit prepared. I got a new cherry blossom sweater that I'm debuting especially for ETH Denver. I got a bunch of new cherry blossom merch, honestly. Cherry blossom shirts. Got to stay on brand.
Just have fun with it. The one thing I wished I'd done in hindsight was like there was like what between two speakers, I forget what happened, but like there was like a 20-minute block of time that I had to fill. For some reason, like a speaker was delayed or something, and I wasn't really ready. And like I just like was typing into ChatGPT and asking it to like give stablecoin jokes, and I tried reading those stablecoin jokes. And they weren't, most of them weren't very good. So like just like have some like patter in the event that you need to kill time for 20 minutes.
Yeah, there's stablecoin jokes can go in all kinds of directions, especially with getting pegged. So we'll see. But for like the regular attendees, if someone's, this is their first conference or beginning of their conference, like tours and careers and whatnot, what advice would you give them?
So I would say that like conferences like this and like meeting people in person, like I know there's a lot of people who are like anon and just like to like sit at home and contribute in front of their keyboard and never show themselves, and which it can work great. And that's a good strategy. But there's so much that can happen in person, like just meeting with people, talking with people. It like really unlocks a lot of these kind of like biz dev-y type things where like you have an idea, but like you talk to someone in person and then like maybe you get a team around the idea. So I think if I were going for the first time and didn't know anything, I would focus on like, they have a lot, like they're really supportive of coders. So I would focus on that. If you're like not a coder, but want to learn, it's a great opportunity too. If you like are a decent coder, and you'll probably get even more out of it. So I would like recommend attending the hackathons and all the various builder events. If you know absolutely nobody, right? Like, cause they'll be a great way to get plugged in and meet people and like figure out what's going on. And then if you already know people, just like, you know, talk to people.
Talk to people. That's the number one thing. Don't be like, I remember when I started going to conferences a few years ago, I just introduced myself to everybody. It was just nonstop. And also like the selfie thing. If you want to remember somebody, you got to take a selfie with them. Have you ever had a moment where you took a selfie with someone a few years ago and then you see them a few years later, like, oh, you look familiar, you start talking, and then you like, oh, let's get each other's telegrams. And you notice like 2 years before that, you guys took a selfie. That's happened to me multiple times.
Yes. Well, you're like a next level of like crypto celebrity at this point though. So
no, I'm not. I am looking forward to the events that, you know, between Stable Summit, AppChain Day, the main conference, a Fractal in time.
Yes, that's the advice I should give to people. If you don't know anything, if it's your first conference, go to the Fractal event.
I actually have two Frax events and then one party at Flywheel. So we have a Fractal. What's the calendar? I'm not sure if I think probably the time this films, so the Fraxlin time would have happened, but we're actually hosting a happy hour on the last day.
That's Sunday, right?
Sunday. So yeah. We're hosting it with the My Guys, like a East stablecoin send off. So
nice.
Yeah.
I'll have to miss that one. I'll be at the Fraxtal event for sure. We'll be doing a kind of like smallish live llama party on Friday morning. If you all are up for it, you should stop by.
Ooh, yeah, I could be convinced. I'm down for a llama party. I should ask you if you want to like speak on stage at a Fraxtal. I'm trying to see if I can get like a few projects together, or like somebody just say like their piece about, you know, what they're building, like, oh, a few minutes, like why they're excited for Fraxtal. Like my whole goal with a Fraxtal in time is to get people excited about Fraxtal and the vision of Frax long term, getting everybody in one place and hype them up. That's like my whole goal with that. So we'll see. This is a time capsule. We'll see how this goes.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that I found weird registering, because, okay, so like everyone should also, if you're planning on going for the first time, find a list of side events and just register for everything. Mm-hmm. I don't know about you, but I found it shocking how many like rabbit holes and niches within DeFi I have, or crypto I should say, like I have no knowledge of, right? Like I'd apply to like all these events and I'd be like, I've never heard of this, never heard of that, never heard of that. I won't end up going to those, obviously. I'm gonna self-select into my like little bubble. But it really is like choose your own adventure. You could like go into whichever like weird niche you want to.
Mm-hmm. And that actually leads well to my next question. What do you think about all these other categories that have come up into the spotlight, such as AI, DePen, DeSci, DeThis, DeThat? They've really taken center stage, and DeFi has kind of just stayed in the same place. Like, what are your thoughts on all these other things taking into the fold?
Okay, so I'm super interested in artificial intelligence. I think that if crypto didn't exist, that's probably where I'd be, somewhere around AI. And it's a golden age for AI at the moment. It's also interesting because it's a field that has its own kind of problems. Like people talk about centralization issues within crypto, but I don't see it compared. Like there's huge centralization issues with AI, right? So that's like a whole different beast. But I'm like a big believer that like we're going to like. The current generation of AI is like, it's very amazing, but it's not like, okay, so let me like rephrase this. When ChatGPT kind of broke on the scene, I feel like it like smashed people's expectations of like where AI was, right? Like people thought it was like down here, and all of a sudden like people are like, it's up here. And I think we're going to have many more like similar type like epiphanies over the next several years at like very rapid pace, like where... maybe not even from OpenAI, but just like some organizations are going to be like starting to like use AI in like very mind-bending ways in terms of like abilities to organize mass amounts of people or money or just all sorts of things, including some like that will intersect with crypto.
What do you think about that intersection between AI and crypto? Because a lot of people see it like, oh, it's a hype cycle. Like I don't buy it right now. Is there anything legit behind that right now, or is it just a meme?
So a lot of the AI output at the moment is garbage, right? And like that's probably something you've noticed if you use ChatGPT, is like you ask it for like a one line answer and it gives you a 50 line answer. So like the problem with AI at the moment is like overabundance, whereas crypto is scarcity, right? Like it's about how do you take like precious block space and keep it like scarce. So it's sort of like going to be a natural like collision of these two as people like take the like overabundance of AI output and have to like fit it into block space. And it's going to cause the best AIs to win. So I don't think we've yet seen like really exceptional trading bots being built using AI, or really MEV bots is going to be the big one.
Wait, this is interesting. So AI overabundance, you say it, give it an input, its output is like long, whatever. Crypto is all about scarcity because, you know, there's a price on block space. And so when you combine crypto and AI, you can't have that overabundance, and you're gonna have to like fit it into the block space, and that's where the magic could happen.
It's gonna force the AI models to get really, really good. Like only the best AI is gonna be able to have room on the chain.
Yeah. What do you think of things like Tau? I actually like finally learned about the history of Tau quite recently. BitTensor. Have you
heard
of
I'm not. I'm not super familiar with Tao.
Tell us, Dave.
Tell us. Okay, so this is what I know about it. I listened to an interview with Tekin, like the founder of DAO 5. He used to be at Polychain, and BitTensor started in like late 2020, early 2021, and it was like I believe it was parity chains, like whatever Polkadot is. And each coprocessor is its own parachain. And so if you want like one thing from like one chain, you could like use that one. And Tao is like the center of it. So I'm trying to think. I definitely have to do a bit more research. I've just seen a lot of interest around it, and it had a fair launch, and its genesis sounded like similar to like other successful fair launch projects. And it seems to be the premier. I have to do more research on it, and I suggest everyone don't take what I said. Do your own research on it. Watch that interview with like Tekin with it was a recent podcast interview with him. I should look into it. I'm not an expert, but it what interests me about AI and like crypto is like all these are just like protocols in different ways, and like AI is like alert LLM protocol, and crypto is like a blockchain protocol, and it's like how do you combine the two on top of each other.
Yeah, I expect that we're going to see most of the Nexus is coming from MEV. I'd be surprised if it's not happening already, just because, like, you know, if you get a really, like, efficient MEV builder using AI to, like, better identify, like, the weird transactions and, like, you know, slot their own transactions in, it's just a sort of natural, like, AIs can figure it out better than humans.
Yeah, and have you, we were going to say, Kit?
No, I was just trying to understand like what Garrix is picturing with AI and blockchain, because for me it's more so about like resources of, you know, AI is going to consume a ton of resource, and blockchain is the way to divert and direct where resources go. So like I agree with you that the overabundance of AI is going to have to like tighten to fit into the constraints of crypto, but crypto is going to be really good at directing where the resource go, whether it be block space, whether it be GPU processing power, or, you know, whether it be like human power, because over time it's prompt engineering that's really gonna kind of take it to the next level as well, right? And then this prompt engineer also is limited. There's so many few people who could prompt well, and I'm just seeing like AI overlap in that sense. I never thought about it like, oh, this AI is going to help this MEV searcher index the blockchain quicker and find opportunities and patterns quicker. I never thought about it like that.
Well, yeah, there's like going to be like 50,000 different like L2s out there. Like, and what human is going to have time to go through each of them and figure out like how to build the best
that's true.
For it, right?
Good point. Like, good point.
Yeah. But you can
there's a lot of opportunity ahead of us.
Yeah, you build the best MEV like AI powered searcher, and you just deploy it and say whichever one makes the most money, that's like where we're gonna put our compute power.
It's a money machine.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, when used correctly, I feel like AI is just a coordination mechanism to get humanity to create more chips and get more power towards these machines. That's what AI is. It's coordinating. I mean, look at NVIDIA. And look at all these different chip companies.
Yeah. I mean, it's, AI, like, so did you ever read the Kevin Kelly book, What Technology Wants?
No, I haven't.
So this is a pretty good one. It came out, like, it came out a long time ago, probably even before, like, crypto was a thing. But his assertion, Kevin Kelly was the editor-in-chief of Wired Magazine for, like, decades. So he's, like, you know, tech person. And his contention is that, the kind of agglomeration of technology is itself a life form of sorts, is like the sort of like reductive thesis of his book. And like he brings up a number of things to like cite this, technology as this kind of life form, it has like wants and needs, right? It wants to reproduce itself. Like, it's only natural that like AI is driving us towards like driving NVIDIA prices up to like the moon. Things like that.
I could see
that's what technology wants. It wants better chips. So it's breeding humans and like it's coercing humans into doing so.
We made Sand think, guys. Look where it's got us. I saw a funny meme the other day, or something funny, like what we thought like AI would be, like ending the world, like, but what AI actually is the Air Canada call, like the AI chatbot made up a policy to calm down an angry customer, and they said you'll get a refund, but that wasn't the policy. So then this is how AI gets personhood. Like, that was the meme. Like, how we think AI gets personhood. Like, oh, like all this oppression, blah, blah, blah. How it actually gets personhood. No, it's actually a separate entity, Air Canada says.
Well, it's worth remembering that, like, pretty much every advancement in technology, not all, but, like, a lot tend to make the user experience for some of these sites, like, way worse, right? Like, we thought chatbots in the first place were going to, like, be, like, a great thing because people hate waiting on the phone. And now, like, you have to wait in the chat bot for a million years to connect to an agent who tells you to connect to the phone. And now we're going to be connected to AI chatbots that are going to be making up wrong information. So it's like, there's going to be a lot of bad things. Like, the end consumer is going to get screwed even harder, because that's what drives share prices up in the stock market.
Squeezing for the bottom line.
Go ahead, Garrett.
I just remember a story about someone who, like, had a horrible customer service call with Xfinity, hung up and bought Xfinity stock, because they're like, okay, yeah, like, if they're screwing me over, like, they're doing that to improve their bottom line, so they're doing a good job of it.
Oh, that's a good way to think.
How did the stock do?
I don't know. What were you gonna say, Kit?
Oh no, I just wanted to ask you guys, like, you know, we're thinking about AI, but the one AI that really caught me was like Sora. Or Sora, or whatever.
Oh, the video stuff.
The video one, that when I was like, you know, because all of us here are kind of like started with content creation, right? And I just imagine it was like a gentleman wearing suit talking about Curve Finance, daily runs in front of a desk with a camera light, like, you know, and then like come up with a script, read Twitter every day to see what is the latest, and then write a script for me. Like, imagine like that was outputted for us. Like, that's crazy.
I will admit, I try and use I do use ChatGPT every day. I've tried to use it to write my newsletter, and it's not there yet.
It's not there. Yeah, it's not. Yeah.
Hopefully one day, I look forward to the day I can go out of business, because it'll be better than me. But it'll probably have to come from a model I build and train myself. And as cool as like ChatGPT is, like, remember, that's like just like a portion of AI stuff, right? Like, the stuff I'm talking about with like MEV bots are just going to be using like advanced TensorFlow, no prompt engineering, just like straight up like numbers, data frames going in and out.
Right.
So
it's been nuts. It's been crazy.
Like, the level it's at right now with the ability to like talk and basically spout gibberish is just like one small facet of AI. Just like so many other areas of research going on within it.
Yeah, it's gonna be exciting to see the future. But I'm not. I think we're getting towards the end of the hour, so I think we can wrap up here. We'll make this a quick pod.
David, before we do that, I would love to ask Curve Cap, like, from his experience, like, launching, like, expanding onto L2s, because obviously Curve now has a suite of products, right? And when you guys kind of approach an L2 and to choose to launch an L2, do you come up with, hey, we're going to first bring the DEX, and then we'll bring the CRV USD, and then we're going to bring you the lending protocol? Or is it like this one fat suite just comes on at once?
Yeah, so historically, Curve USD contracts haven't really existed on any chain except for mainnet. So you could bridge Curve USD, like the token, to other chains, but like the architecture and the minting of Curve USD has all been on mainnet. Mostly because like Ethereum is sufficiently decentralized, so it's not going to be able to rug. But a lot of these L2s are like centralized enough that if they wanted, they could just like say, ha ha ha, we're going to like be evil. We control all the sequencers. We're going to like, you know, take this Curve USD you minted for ourselves. So for security reasons, Curve USD couldn't be on side chains other than like just the token being bridged. Llama Lend, however, will be on all the side chains. There's not been like a historical choice between which should we launch. It's just been like, let's launch the DEX on there. And then the DEX gets launched, and you'll see like sometimes like they'll just like launch a couple pools and they won't even like seed it or anything. But every now and then they'll like do like a more proper launch, like they've done more like Arbitrum base. where they like give some really good rewards, bridge some Curve USD on there, give out Curve USD as Curve as rewards. There's also like a bit of a problem with sidechains in that, like, since some of the bridge hacks, like boosts from Curve haven't been going to sidechains, so that needs to be fixed up before like there could be a proper like L2 strategy.
Oh.
But I'm gonna guess that in the next like suite of things, we're gonna be also deploying Llama Land to all the sidechains as well. So then there will actually be like that full suite of products, and I think it'll just be everywhere Curve has a DEX, it'll also have Llama Land.
The DeFi Trinity playing out with Curve. You guys got the DEX, the lending protocol, and stablecoin.
Yeah. Frax called it, right?
How many? I wish there was like a poly market, like just like betting on things like would be trends, and like Frax, because like if I just like follow Frax, I can see what's gonna happen in the future, like a crystal ball. DeFi Trinity, LSTs taking off, L2s. Frax was literally the first to announce and build in that direction. And then you see everyone catch up. And so whatever Frax is like thinking and doing now, outside of Frax, I was like, what's in the future? Like, you best believe everyone's going to go in that direction.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice to see that validation, right? Because we just came off of a 2-year bear market. Obviously, the two of you were around for it. I don't know how you told your family and friends what you were doing, because they probably looked at you like you're crazy.
But it wasn't now, bad this time around as last time.
Yeah.
I'm just an amateur journalist.
But at least when you see like that, like the things people are talking about with Frax, like then play out in the real world, at least you can like say, okay, there's real concrete evidence. I'm not crazy. Like what I'm predicting is happening.
Yeah, it feels good. And I'm definitely looking forward to what the future has for Frax and for Curve, for Convex, and, you know, everyone in our little DeFi family.
I have one last question in regards to growth. And I'm like, because, you know, growing a stablecoin, minting the stablecoin arguably is like the easiest part, but the growth and the adoption is when things get extremely challenging, and especially with competition, yada yada. So like I was wondering, what did you find that was most effective in terms of growth for the CRV USD? Is it more partnerships? Is it just better yields? Like, what did the users want?
Yeah, so I think I'd say that at the end of the day, it's like more partnerships is what always makes these things like grow, right? Like, it's Metcalfe's law. Like, if there's one use for the token, whatever. If there's 10 protocols that have adopted it, then some of these protocols will like interact with each other. If there's 100, 1,000, like it just gets more valuable the more protocols adopt it. And really, like in our space, it's time, right? Like, Frax has been around for a long time, and Frax is now integrated like a kajillion places, and Frax is like among the most like useful like stable coins out there, because like if I get a Frax, I know that like there's a lot I can do with it. Like, I could keep it as Frax, I could trade it to any number of coins, I could stake it, I could bridge it. Like, it's it exists everywhere, and I'm very happy to get a Frax. So in the early days of Curve USD, of course, like you couldn't really fake that, but as it's been around for 6 months, it started to see more and more integration and adoption. So like just that level of like integrations that have already been done have got it. I would say it's like past this like critical threshold where I don't think you can kind of undo that. So it's kind of, but you never know.
Was there like one key integration, like, oh, this perp DEX using CRV USD, or like this lending protocol taking on, was like really that inflection point? Was there any moment like that, or was it like a slow and steady grinding?
So honestly, in the early days, like when when Conic Finance had about like 70% of the Curve USD supply. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Like,
that's right.
Uh-huh. That was like, okay, wow, this is like a like meaningful like adoption from this other protocol. When that disappeared overnight, like that was like kind of spooky. And I kind of wonder what would have happened had that not happened, right? Like, if Conic had survived and, you know, Curve USD could be 200, 300 million at this point if we hadn't had that setback. But I'd say like that, like adoption at the very outset, like was like the like real exciting moment. And then since then, like that disappeared, but like a lot of other protocols kind of stepped up to integrate with it. Silo Finance, like immediately profited the most in Conic's wake by like getting a lot of like CurveUSD adoption onto it. From there, it kind of went on to Pendle and got into that ecosystem. And then from there, it's kind of like snowballed outwards. And like there's like dozens of services now that integrated with it.
Gotcha.
You love to see it. May the future of thousands of stablecoins commence.
Yeah, I mean, I am really bullish. I'm sure you saw it too. Yeah, of course, I saw you were writing about it. Like, Y Combinator is not like the friendliest like organization towards crypto. But the fact that they're like trying to get more stablecoin adoption, like they recognize that it's the killer use case of crypto.
Oh yeah. I was going to tweet something snarky, but I was like, you know what? I'll just tweet something like friendly and be like, look, you know, stablecoins are here to stay. But, you know,
I don't be mean what to tourists, guys.
Yeah. No, we want to encourage people. It's not like, ha, I told you so. Yeah.
I mean, I could imagine we see a Tether Bitcoin flipping in our lifetime.
Yeah, I could see that.
Ooh, that's hot. Ooh, I like that.
That's a hot take. Yeah. Tether's the most successful business of all time.
Like Tether's the new Bitcoin. You heard it here first from CurveCap.
Like, could you imagine if it does? Like, I mean,
that would mean Tron is the most valuable blockchain in the world at that point.
Yeah, I mean, that says a lot about strategy and moves in the space for Tether to get to that point. And so, like Tron being Tether chain, like what that means. And I mean, people are already thinking about like, damn, like Tether on Tron adoption is massive. It was really the adoption that Ethereum hoped to have for their stablecoins on Ethereum, but because Tron's so cheap.
It was what Bitcoin was hoping for, right? Like the
Bitcoin
was
e-cash,
that the global South would adopt Bitcoin as the like hedge against inflation. And they like the market has said they don't care about Bitcoin. They care about stablecoins.
So yeah.
It's pretty wild.
Real world use cases. You know, you love to see it. I had one last question. How's everything going at Leviathan? I remember when we were at ETH Denver last year, you first proposed to me your idea for Leviathan. It was called Llama News Network, but then you changed it to Leviathan. How do you think that's gone? Like, what have you learned? Like, how is it different than your standard CurveCap newsletter?
Yeah, that's really been a blast. So before Leviathan, like for my sake, I kept getting distracted by all the like shiny objects coming out of crypto. So I'd like write these newsletters about like super random protocols or trends I discovered in the crypto space that had nothing to do with Curve. And people were like, hey, you know, I subscribe to this for Curve news, keep it related to Curve. So I took that feedback to heart. But then there's still all these like super interesting like things happening, which like I want to tell people about, right? Like if I find something cool, I want to share it. So for me, it's been really nice to have this like ability to like share some of these like cool or interesting things that I come across. Yeah, we've got like an awesome team, like, you know, Sam, who's like super involved with Flywheel. He's been like building out the podcasting media arm of it. He's like, you know, I don't need to tell you, he's like the best in the business. We've got like, you know, we got like this like loose army of people who like no one like commits to doing it full time because we all are like super busy, but all of our powers combined are able to like bootstrap a like functional like news network. So if any of you are out there and like interested in crypto and want to contribute, please visit Leviathan. You can check out our Telegram headline. It's LNN_headlines. Follow Leviathan News on Twitter, now X. Reach out to us there and like ask how you can join. Like we're building out, like I've been spending a lot of time trying to build out this like Telegram bot that allows us to like automate all this like news headline intake quality assurance and output. So it's been fun for me because I like having like dev projects to work on.
You heard it here, folks. Go check out Leviathan. I'm thinking for, oh wait, does anybody have any more questions? Kids, do you have any more questions?
We're good.
I'm thinking for this like lightning round, we go, I want to ask Garrett, like, what are your predictions going in for, to 2024 and 2025? What's your predictions for the cycle?
I do think that it's going to be bull market season. I think all the trends are lining up for 2024 to be like a good year for markets. It's not always the best news. I had a lot of fun in the bear. The bull markets are not, I mean, it's nice like seeing numbers go up, but other than that, like, it's like, you see all the proliferation of scams, like a lot of people like
see all the tourists,
all the tourists come back, you know, it's not as much fun in that level. So like, I'm kind of looking, not looking forward to that part. But I do think that we're going to see, like, I don't know, the last bull market felt like it was interrupted by the Do Kwon stuff. I don't know if you guys felt the same way. Like,
yeah, I mean, that was the beginning of the bear. Yeah.
Yeah. It felt like we had like more room to run. Like we had all these narratives I wanted to see play out that we never quite got there. So I'm really hopeful that like this bull market, we actually get to fulfill like a lot of the tech promises that people have been talking about, which I think we will, right? Like L2s are like, Ethereum is better positioned to scale now than it was 2 years ago. So like,
yeah,
That's good. Honestly, like I think we'll see an Ethereum ETF in the not too distant future. Maybe not like May, as soon as May, as some people are hoping. It might be later in 2024 or 2025. I think it's going to hit though. I think it's going to cause number to go up for Ethereum. I think that's going to cause an alt season for Ethereum. Like all of our tokens will hopefully like catch some of that. So I think it's a good time to pivot to crypto if you've been in AI for a bit.
If you're in AI, pivot to crypto.
So funny. I got one.
Yeah.
Do you think there will be a re-rate of DeFi moving into this re-rate. New cycle? Like people would care about revenue. People would care about like value accrual, like actual, you know, more than just number go up.
What people are going to care about, and it's sad to say, is the yields, right? Like that's where Terra came in. They're promising 20% on stables. I think you're going to see that effect, unfortunately. Like there's going to be new DeFi protocols at launch and they'll promise the highest number they think they can get away with. And it will just be more and more DeFi protocols doing that until they one up each other until it becomes unsustainable and they collapse. Like
many such cases. Nice. My final
it's
question.
It's bad for actually all of us because like, yeah. I don't see Frax going out there and saying we're going to give 55% stablecoin yields. Like, cause you know, Frax is like a blue chip and it's been around for a while. Curve's not going to do that. Right. But there's going to be some like someone who watched Sam Bankman-Fried and said, I can do that, but I can do it right.
I can do it better.
Yeah, exactly. And it's going to happen again. And it's like, it's going to suck.
Yeah. My final question is, who would you recommend as a guest? Who would you like to see on Flywheel?
I mentioned you should talk to Martin Krung, the business dev from Curve. I think he'd be a really good person to talk to.
Can we get Mitch on?
That would be nice. He's really tough to pin down. Let's see, who would I like to hear from? You know who's really good? Viper 4 is launching soon. If you can get Charles Cooper on to talk about it, he'd be really good.
What's Viper 4?
Viper, the programming language. It's like a Solidity alternative.
Language. Oh, yeah.
They're releasing the beta version of that before ETH Denver, so people will have... It'll be out by now for anyone listening to this. So go play with that.
Okay. Wow.
That's a good angle.
Yeah. Go deeper into the code.
Yeah. Yeah. He's really good. Patrick Collins, I think it'd be good to talk to him, speaking of code.
Yeah. Chainlink guy, right?
Former Chainlink.
Chainlink. Okay. Nice. Those are good recs. But yeah, I think that's it. Kid, did you have any final?
Oh yeah. Get recs. No. Get recs too. Logarithmic recs. If you haven't.
He was number two. He was our second guest, second pod.
Who's bullish? But
get him back. Get him back.
Yeah, this is such a great pod. Like I miss talking with you, Curve Cap. I think we should totally have you on at least like once every 6 months just to do like a vibe session. Is what the doctor's ordering?
Or maybe we can have like Curve Cap co-host while you're away, Kit.
Oh, yeah. We'll talk about that offline. We'll talk about that offline.
Yeah.
Only if you give me a Patagonia beanie.
What color? I'll send it.
Before we go, Garrett, where can people find you? Where can people learn more about Curve?
So follow me on X, just Curve Cap, all one word. If you want to learn more about Curve, you can go to my blog. It's curve.substack.com. I publish there weekdays, except holidays. And those would probably be the best places to find me.
So you heard it here. Garrett, thanks so much for coming on again, and we'll see you in Denver.
Looking forward to it. See you guys there.
See ya.
All right, everybody. Welcome to the post-game show. I'm your host, DeFi Dave, here, as always, with Capital K. We're wrapping up another episode with Curve Cap, Garrett Hall, the Curve Maximalist, giving his takes of everything Curve ecosystem, giving his takes in DeFi, interesting money cycles being built, interesting AI things developed. We went all over the place with this one. Kit, what are your thoughts?
Man, I just said it was just a great vibe session talking with like-minded. It's so good. We literally talked about everything like serious, like business development, tax and tips, and then also all the way down to like, hey, what do you think about this? Or how about, you know, let's do some bull market math. And you know, it was nice.
Yeah, no, it's Garrett's a friend of the show. You know, it's always a treat having him on. It's always a treat seeing him in person. Someone I feel like we see eye to eye with. He understands, you know, the triumphs, the trials, the tribulations, the ups and the downs, everything in between when it comes to being in our little corner of DeFi. So it's always great having him on. What were some insights you got from this? Is there like a favorite point of this episode?
Let me think about this one. You go first. Let me think on this.
Something that comes to mind is you made me think about AI differently. It sounds like he was looking at like practical uses of AI in crypto, and like the first practical use is obviously MEV bots. You're not going to be able to scour every roll up in every chain, so getting an MEV bot to do that automatically makes logical sense.
Yeah, you know, I never thought about AI in that sense. I guess I was so used to the consumer application of it, and not like the AI.
Yeah,
and when I think of AI in crypto, I think of it as like resource management. Like I said on the pod, where it's like GPUs, allocating where those GPU things go. That's why, you know, Filecoin, Arweave, and all of those things are like, you know, Render, for example, also.
All that stuff. I need to read up on Tao. I got to get a better description of that. I thought I did an okay job. I could probably done a bit better. But it's amazing how much crypto has grown as an industry. It's like it used to, even 4 years ago, it's like I can't keep up with everything. Now I definitely can't keep up with everything.
Yeah,
it's
impossible.
You know,
you got to pick your niche and then kind of stick to it.
Yeah. Is it even worth keeping up with everything, you think? Or is it better? Because now there's there's multiple chains that are they're here to stay. You have Ethereum, you have Solana. Now you have like other things coming out. Like, is it even worth it trying to like play on all these different chains? It's like you're going to like a different country.
100%. I think you should pick like one home country, and then you should have like vacation homes.
Yeah,
you know,
I think
a handful. Yeah,
I think if you're a trader, it doesn't matter. If you're a trader, you just see a trade. It doesn't matter what chain it's on. It could be on fucking Hex, honestly. But if you're an educator, if you're more of a builder, more of a missionary, you definitely should have a home base, a home chain, and you know, you can explore, you can appreciate. It's like everybody has their own religion, but you can still like, you know, I'm Jewish. I go visit a mosque or visit a church sometime. You know, I can appreciate the beauty in those buildings. You can do the same thing with chains. It doesn't have to be so divisive all the time.
Yeah, but keeping an open mind, I
keeping
think
an open
is,
mind
is the difference. Yeah,
yeah. Don't be a maxi.
Don't be a maxi.
Yeah, you can have your values, but don't, you know. What's the word? What's the phrase? Strong opinions loosely held. Is that the phrase?
Yeah, weakly held.
Weakly held. Yeah. Anyways, but this was a fun one. I'm excited to see Curve Cap in Denver, passing the torch on hosting Stable Summit. I'm kind of nervous. I'm a little bit nervous for Stable Summit, but like,
why?
It's just like the pre jitters and stuff. But like, I'm actually like looking. I think he gave good advice. He was like, "Dave, just have fun. Just have fun." So I'm just gonna have fun. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to like go back on this pod and think, watch this later, after Stable Summit, after he's done, and be like, "Oh wow!" Like, you know, there's no sense in being nervous at all. Everything's gonna be.
It was a terrible experience.
And if it is a terrible experience, I can laugh about it.
True.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, it was great having Garrett back on the pod. And if you want to see him again, if you want to see all our episodes, make sure you go ahead subscribe, hit that like button, leave us a comment, let us know what you think. Go to our website, FlowDeFi.com. Subscribe to that. You will thank yourself later for all the Frax and DeFi Alpha. Make sure you follow us on all our socials at Flywheel DeFi on Twitter, TikTok, and Telegram. Follow us on Farcaster at Flywheel. And make sure you can follow me, yours truly, on Twitter at DeFiDave22 and on Farcaster at DeFiDave.
You can follow me at 0xCapital_K.
And we'll see you next week. I love that. Everything said on this episode is not financial or tax advice. This channel is strictly for educational purposes and is not an investment advice or solicitation to buy or sell any assets or to make any financial decisions. This video is not tax advice whatsoever. Please talk to your accountant and do your own research.